The next matter on calendar is Dogra v. Lyles, case number 59381. Is counsel ready to proceed?
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice Pickering, members of the Supreme Court, and counsel, may it please the Court. This is the appellant's brief concerning whether or not Nevada has specific personal jurisdiction over the owner of a motor vehicle who resides in another state but gives permission to that the driver of that vehicle to come to Nevada where that driver is involved in a motor vehicle collision causing injuries to citizens for the state of Nevada.
Was the record clear that permission was given by Jane Lyles to her daughter Susan to drive to Las Vegas?
Yes, Your Honor.
I hate to interrupt you. Do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like about 3 minutes, if that's
okay.
All right.
Thank you.
The cases in this are very, very clear. All of the cases that you look throughout the country indicate that if a driver of a vehicle from one state gives permission to the driver in that state, if the owner gives permission to the driver, that driver goes to another state, that driver causes serious injuries, then under specific personal jurisdiction, that owner is subject to the jurisdiction of that foreign state. That's exactly what happened in this case. In this particular case, the respondent, the owner of the vehicle, gave permission to her daughter, the driver of the vehicle, to use her vehicle as she saw fit and to drive it to Las Vegas, Nevada. Unfortunately, there was a horrendous motor vehicle accident just outside of Sloan, Nevada, causing serious and debilitating injuries to my client, Melinda Dogra. Since this matter was dismissed against the respondent, there was a jury trial, and my client suffered approximately $3 million worth of damages in that case. The driver of the vehicle was not only given permission by the respondent, but was also the daughter of the respondent. The driver of the vehicle lived in the same residence as the respondent. The driver of the vehicle used the credit cards the respondent provided to the driver to buy the gas to come to Las Vegas for this trip. The initial problem in this case is that when the initial motion to dismiss on jurisdiction was filed by counsel for the respondent, an affidavit was provided to the Honorable Judge Bell that said two things. It said, one, that the respondent did not have control over the vehicle. We found out later, via the deposition of the respondent, that was not true. That the driver had total control over the vehicle, could have taken that vehicle away from the owner had total control, could have taken that vehicle away from the driver at any time. A second portion of that affidavit that was before Judge Bell said that the owner had no knowledge that the driver would ever take the vehicle to the state of Nevada. In the deposition of the respondent indicated under oath that the driver did have permission to go to the state of Nevada. So when the
it wasn't quite affirmative permission, it was that she never interdicted.
That would be correct, Your Honor. Although if you look at the affidavit that was applied to the district court, the respondent said she never knew that the driver was ever going to go to Las Vegas, and then she recanted that testimony and said, well, I'm not sure if I knew before or after.
Wouldn't that subject her to jurisdiction anywhere in the country?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If you loan your vehicle to someone so you can drive it anywhere you want, and that person drives to New Jersey.
Well, is that what she said? Wasn't the vehicle primarily purchased for her to drive in California?
That's what the affidavit said.
Okay.
That's not what the deposition testimony said.
It was the motion to dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction granted before the deposition was taken.
Long before. And in fact, Your Honor, the appellant at the time that the motion was heard requested time for a discovery to go into this issue, and it was denied. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at what Judge Bell had before her, i.e. an affidavit said that the owner had no control over the vehicle and had no knowledge, then I can see how Judge Bell might grant that motion. But that's not the facts of this case. And in this case, as we sit here before you, you have not only facts that contravene the affidavit, but you have additional facts. You have facts that the owner of the vehicle not only paid for the vehicle, paid for repairs for the vehicle, paid to maintain the vehicle, paid for the gas of the vehicle, but gave permission to the driver to drive anywhere that driver wished, including the state of Nevada. There is testimony on the record that Mr. Raleigh, God bless his soul, got from the respondent that she had, that the driver of the vehicle had permission to drive this vehicle to Las Vegas, Nevada. That falls squarely within minimum contacts. It falls squarely within all the case law that I've seen, and that's...
Mr. Bransky, what are we to do, though, with the amended decision order as to the motion for reconsideration where the district court talks in terms of this was evidence or information, facts known prior?
Well, if I understand your question, Your Honor, what happened in this case, and I apologize if I don't get the answer that you want, so let me know. What happened in this case is that the district court grants the motion to dismiss the respondent based on lack of personal jurisdiction. Then the respondent, on her own, without any acts by the appellant, files a motion in the very case that the respondent had already been dismissed in. Is no longer a party, they file a motion to consolidate that case with three other cases where the respondent is a defendant. So regardless of whether the court determines if there's an impersonal jurisdiction over the respondent from all the contacts that we listed, the respondent has actually affirmatively brought herself into the state of Nevada by filing a motion in a case she's already been dismissed in. After the order of dismissal, asking for this case to be consolidated with three other cases, all related to the same transaction, asking this state for the benefits of its laws. That is an affirmative act requesting that person to be part of this jurisdiction. So not only do you have, I think, more than enough evidence to show minimum contacts and specific personal jurisdiction, but over and above that, the respondent files a document in a case the respondent is not a party in, asking a Nevada court to consolidate that case with three other cases. The respondent's not simply in the caption. The respondent's requesting the very actions of the state of Nevada courts to consolidate the other cases that respondent was formerly in, the case respondent was formerly in, and three cases the respondent's in now because of all the injuries caused by the driving accident. That is an affirmative act acting for this state. I don't see how anybody could argue that is not subjecting one to the jurisdiction of the state when one files a very motion asking for relief.
I'd like to go back just for a moment to your assertion that the deposition testimony demonstrates purposeful availment of Nevada. And I want to confirm that what you're referring to is the deposition testimony of pages 262 to 263 of the record, that being the testimony of Susan Riles.
No, I was referring to the testimony of Jane Riles.
Okay, and what would be the record reference for that?
You know, if I was a better lawyer, I would have that for you right now, Your Honor. Let me see if I can find that.
Why don't you get it on your break if you can't find it?
I'd be glad to do that. Thank you, Your Honor. As I was saying, so you've got specific personal jurisdiction over the owner of the vehicle. You've got jurisdiction over the owner of the vehicle because that individual filed a motion in a case that individual is no longer in, requesting the state laws of Nevada to assist her. So you've got two independent bases for finding jurisdiction. And what's very important is that in, you know, this case is the type of case that will determine whether or not Nevadans will be able to get recompense from owners of vehicles who give permission of drivers who were not supposed to be on the road. In this particular case, the driver of the vehicle had been in two previous auto accidents and had three speeding tickets. who is in the best position, other than the owner of the vehicle, to make sure that that vehicle is properly insured for the types of injuries that can occur in a case such as this? The person that owns the vehicle, the person that puts the gas in the vehicle, the person that maintains the vehicle, and the person that repairs the vehicle. In this particular instance, that's all responsible. And I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Very well, thanks. You have for almost 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice Pickering. May it please the Court, Peter Mazzio and Daniel Posenberg on behalf of Respondent Jane Miles. This case presents the issue of whether a mother living in California who gave her car to her daughter to use in California purposely avails herself to the jurisdiction of Nevada simply because her daughter drove the vehicle from California to Nevada. And the answer is no. The second issue is whether the constitutional analysis regarding purposeful availment for personal jurisdiction should be disregarded or avoided somehow because a Nevada statute imposes strict liability on a registered owner. And the answer is no. Due process requires that a person can only be held into court in the foreign state by action that is purposely directed and targeted to the foreign state so as to subject themselves to the privileges and protections of that state.
Do you disagree with counsel's statement that affirmative permission was given to drive the car to Las Vegas?
Absolutely. That is not part of the record.
What does the record show that? It's a little confusing.
The record actually is pretty clear. We have testimony from both Jane and Susan Miles. And Jane Miles said that she had first learned, this is on in the transcript on in the respondent's answering brief, page 82, the deposition transcript of 95-124. Jane Miles first learned that her daughter was going to Las Vegas on August 22, 2008, after the accident, when she got a telephone call from her daughter. So yes, I do dispute it. Jane Miles had never given her. Jane Miles first gave her daughter, Susan Miles, this vehicle in 2003, 5 years before the accident. The record is very clear that this car had never left the state of California prior to the date of the accident.
How is it so clear, counsel? Or is it just that there was no accident elsewhere?
I'm sorry?
How is it so clear that it never left the state of California, or is it that there just was never an accident outside the state of California?
And that's because both Susan Miles and Jane Miles testified. Susan Miles, who had pretty much exclusive possession of this vehicle for 5 years prior to the accident, she was given permission, and she was given this vehicle at the age of 16. And this is her testimony. She was given the vehicle with the understanding that she would drive it from high school to home and then from college to home. She testified, Susan Miles testified, that she had never left the state, as far as she knew, prior to the date of the accident. She didn't know if she ever crossed state lines into Utah or any other state.
Then Susan said, she testified in her deposition that she never told her mother she was going to Las Vegas? Or what? What was Susan's version of that?
Susan's version was that 5 minutes earlier, she, based on her best recollection, she might have told her mother she was gone. But based on both Susan Miles and Jane Miles' testimony, at the time of the accident, immediately preceding the accident, neither Susan Miles or Jane Miles recalled if Jane Susan Miles didn't recall if her mother had if she had spoken to her mother about it or if her mother gave her explicit permission to leave the state. There is no evidence in the record at all that the man, Jane Miles, gave her express permission to drive from California to Nevada on August 22, 2000.
Well, I guess my question was did Susan and Jane, except the mother, know that Susan was going to drive? Is that a disputed fact, you know, that she was going to drive to Las Vegas?
And I'd say that's not a disputed fact.
It's not.
Based on the testimony of both Jane Miles and Susan Miles.
So, counsel, how do you, if we accept your argument with respect to the knowledge of mom, how then do we respond to petitioner's suggestion that even without that, we still have the mom's motion to consolidate with three other cases, which clearly brings her within our jurisdiction?
The motion, I would submit that the motion to consolidate does not reinsert Jane Miles back into this case. She had already preserved the defense of lack of personal jurisdiction when she filed the motion. motion to dismiss, dismissing her from the case. I would argue that the improper vehicle for bringing her back into a case as a party, she has to be served with a complaint again. She's not a party. She doesn't have standing. The motion to consolidate does not provide affirmative relief. It's a procedural motion. And the reason why Susan Nails brought it, because she was a party on three other cases. And she wanted all the cases heard for consistency and relevance by one judge, and that would have been Judge Bell, the judge that had initially dismissed the case for which we're here today.
Mr. Messi, I'm a little confused in this, and maybe you can walk through it. Judge Bell granted the motion to dismiss based upon lack of personal jurisdiction. Subsequent to the time, did Jane file a motion before Judge Bell to consolidate the case with the other cases, or was the motion to consolidate filed in a different department? I mean,
as is required by NRCP Rule 42, she was required to file that motion in the initial department that received the
first. Even though she'd been dismissed as a defendant based on lack of jurisdiction.
That's correct, but also let's look at the timeline. The motion to dismiss was December 3rd. That's when the decision in order was given,
okay.
2010. The motion to consolidate was 7 days later.
Okay.
So I would submit, I'm not aware of any notice of entry of the order of the decision in order, but regardless, I don't think that's an issue. I think the fact that she was dismissed, she's not able to use this procedural motion. It doesn't provide affirmative relief. She can't use this procedural motion. Does not give the court any jurisdiction to say, no, okay, you can insert it yourself back into the case.
But is it a general appearance? I guess that's what Mr. Brensky's arguing. Why wouldn't that be a general appearance to come in and move to consolidate then?
I think the court has done away with the general appearance in the Hansen case. That's not a general appearance because she doesn't, the only way she can reinsert herself back into the case, we would contend, when she's dismissed. She doesn't have standing to use a motion to consolidate to reinsert her back into the case. She's no longer a party. The court doesn't have jurisdiction over her. Motion to consolidate does not give the court jurisdiction over her. That's merely a procedural motion to have consistency in rulings on the other personal jurisdiction motions that would be forthcoming on the other cases, and also for any other procedural issues that are to be heard on these collective cases.
If that's the case, why does she even have standing to bring a motion?
Jane Miles would have standing. She has standing to bring a motion because she had been served with a second case. She had been served with a complaint in that case, and she wanted to consolidate that case with a letter to that dependent.
Right, but this was a motion to consolidate. It was in the initial department where she was dismissed from that case. Why would she have standing to bring any motion in that case?
She would have standing based on the second complaint that was filed against her. She wouldn't have standing in the first case, I would agree with you. But in the second case, she would have standing. But the requirement, pursuant to NRCP...
So was a motion filed in the second case, but in the department that heard the first case?
That's correct.
Okay.
The dismissal of that case for Jay Miles before Judge Bell did not dismiss all the case against Susan Miles, who was still a party.
Okay.
So the motions to consolidate had to be brought to Department 7, Judge Bell, to be heard. Because if they were consolidated, all the cases would then go to Department 7 because of the other pending cases against Susan Miles and the other parties.
And the 54B certification was not issued on that, making the order of dismissal final until after the consolidation was decided, correct?
That is my understanding.
I want to return to the issue of who gave whom permission to do what? Mother, daughter, California, Nevada. And it seems to me each side is presenting its own best face on it. But isn't it accurate that the mother did not forbid the daughter from driving to Nevada, but neither did she affirmatively give her permission to drive to Nevada?
Arguably, that's the best argument that the appellant has, and that would be an accurate reflection of the testimony in this case.
So the deposition testimony does contradict the affidavit from Jane Miles on which the motion to dismiss was premised, because that affidavit said, I did not give her permission to drive to Nevada, when in fact, according to Mr. Brensky, she may not have affirmatively given her permission, but neither did she withhold such permission.
Yes, Chief Justice Pepperoni, that would be equated to unrestricted use, or let's say blanket permission to use the car anywhere. That does not rise to the level of purposeful availment to the...
Tell me why.
Justice Brennan had proposed this foreseeability argument. It goes to the foreseeability of the stream of commerce argument, essentially. To have unrestricted use is essentially putting, as Justice Brennan proposed, putting a product in the stream of commerce, and that it would be foreseeable that it would ultimately, likely, possibly end up in the foreign state. However, this argument has been rejected by the Supreme Court in McCastro and Goodyear, also in Asahi by the opinion of the court by Justice O'Connor, who said that foreseeability alone is insufficient. Justice Wright in Robot Volkswagen said, foreseeability alone has never been a sufficient benchmark for establishing personal jurisdiction. Even further in defining the definition to focus on the defendant's activities. And he said the foreseeability that is crucial to the due process analysis is not the mere likelihood that a product will end up in the foreign state, but it's rather the defendant's actions and connections with the foreign state, such that he would reasonably anticipate being held into court there. So the emphasis isn't on a product that's placed into the stream of commerce, as with the unrestricted use for Susan Wells to use this vehicle anywhere. And by the way, the record supports the fact that Susan Wells used this for 5 years in the state of California before leaving the state on the day of the accident. So it was not foreseeable. Justice Kennedy in Castro used a very good argument or example in addressing the undesirable, I think he said, consequences of placing a product in the stream of commerce. And that was referring to a small local farmer in Florida who sells his product to a large distributor, who in turn distributes to grocers across the country. And he said that if foreseeability was a controlling criterion, then the small local farmer could expect to be sued in Alaska or another state without ever leaving the state of Florida, without ever putting his product out there. So this foreseeability argument, which is the strongest argument that the appellant has been rejected by McCastro, by Goodyear, and in the plurality opinion by Justice O'Connor and Asahi. So that by itself is insufficient to purposely, Justice McCastro, if I may, further went on, and he said, the principal inquiry is whether the defendant's activities manifest an intention to subject him or herself to the foreign state. So it's the defendant's actions, he said, not the expectations, which would be the foreseeability stream of commerce argument. It's the defendant's actions that empower a state court to subject him to judgment. We don't have that here. We do not have any actions by Jane Wiles to subject herself to the jurisdiction of Nevada.
Could you comment on the interpleader action and the argument being made by Mr. Bensky that your filing of that was a purposeful availment of Nevada court system?
I'm sorry, Chief Justice, the interpleader?
Interpleader action was filed by the insurer for Jane Miles, is my understanding?
Yes.
And there's an argument by the appellant that filing of that by an agent, the insurer being the agent of Ms. Miles, was a purposeful availment of the privilege of participating in Nevada's court system. Do I misunderstand the interpleader issue?
I may misunderstand it as well, but if I may, we have two individuals, Susan Miles and Jane Miles, who are both insured by the same insurance company. So Susan Miles was properly subject to the jurisdiction of Nevada as a motorist who drove in from California to Nevada and caused an accident.
And the interpleader was only on behalf of Susan?
Judge, I believe the interpleader action was filed in 2008. So that was prior to the commencement of the lawsuit. That was in the fall of 2008. Commencement of the lawsuit was in November, if I'm not mistaken. Possibly August of 2010. But it was
on behalf of Jane?
I'm sorry?
Was there an appeal filed on behalf of Jane, the mother?
I would think that it would have been for both. I'm not sure, and I don't want to mislead the court. But I know that it was, in fact, filed on behalf of Susan Miles. prior to the commencement of the action against any of these individuals. In looking at plaintiff's reply, he had referred to testimony from Susan Lyles on page 3 of the reply brief, where he said that she said you could, and then in brackets, i.e. drive the vehicle into Nevada. And in Mr. Brunsky's remarks to the court, he said no less than 3 or 4 times that Jane Lyles gave specific permission for Susan Lyles to drive into Nevada. There is absolutely no evidence in the record, any record presented to this court, that Jane Lyles gave express permission for Susan Lyles to drive into Las Vegas. There's been argument made of the fact that she paid for gas and that she took care of the maintenance and she was the owner. Paying for gas and taking care of the maintenance has nothing to do with purposely avoiding herself to the jurisdiction of Nevada. If I may, just a closing statement.
No, you're finished. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, my recollection is that the interpleader action was filed on behalf of both Jane and Susan Lyles when Liberty Mutual filed that action prior to the commencement of this lawsuit. In addition, the motion to consolidate was not filed in another case, as was asked of counsel. The motion to consolidate was filed in this case after the defendant had been dismissed.
That was it filed, was the motion, to consolidate, was it filed on behalf of Susan or Susan and Jane, or how was that phrased?
On behalf of Jane.
Jane and Susan. Alone. Jane and Susan was a party, since the Linda Bell lawsuit, you know, like that. So,
I'm sorry, I apologize. Both Jane and Susan were parties to this lawsuit.
Okay.
The motion to dismiss was on behalf of Jane,
right,
for lack of personal jurisdiction. That motion was granted, we believe, inappropriately, but understandably because of the affidavit issue. Once the Jane was dismissed, counsel for Jane filed a motion in this case asking to consolidate all the other cases.
Could the Jane have separate counsel from Susan?
Obviously not, Your Honor.
Okay. But I guess maybe I'm nitpicking, but the motion to consolidate, did it say come now, Jane and Susan, who move to consolidate, or just comes now, Susan?
Your Honor, Jane is not simply in the caption. Jane is the first person listed on comes now, Jane.
Okay.
And it goes throughout.
She actively moved to consolidate.
This is Jane's motion. This is not Susan's motion. After Jane's been dismissed. Now, Your Honor, several areas where Jane Ross testified concerning permission. In our brief on page 11, it shows the deposition testimony where Jane Lyles testified she allowed Susan Lyles, her daughter, to drive the vehicle to Nevada on August 22nd of 2008. That's page 108, lines 23, well, probably through 30. Also, on the deposition of Jane Lyles, it states on page 63, Susan was driving the vehicle on August 22nd, 2008, with Jane Lyles' permission. On page 83, Jane Lyles did not prevent Susan from going to Las Vegas in the vehicle, and she paid for the gas, etc., etc. The linchpin of this case is permission. Did Susan get permission from her mother to drive the car to Las Vegas? Is there a direct testimony that says, you, Susan, have permission to go to Nevada on August 22nd. Is that contained in the deposition transcripts? No. What is contained in the deposition transcripts is that I, Jane, would have allow Susan to drive wherever she wants. That would include Las Vegas, Nevada. That would include August 22nd of 2008. And in fact, when subjected to examination by Mr. Raleigh in deposition, as opposed to the affidavit, Jane Lyles testified that she may or may not have known about this trip that was planned 5 months prior.
So your point is that this case differs from Budget Rent-A-Car in that the contract in Budget Rent-A-Car expressly forbade driving from California to Nevada?
Absolutely. Budget Rent-A-Car is probably the most important case on this issue because Budget Rent-A-Car says a unilateral decision on the part of a lessee does not bind the lessor or the owner of the vehicle to jurisdiction because the lessor specifically prohibited that contact and the lessor would not expect the vehicle to be go to the state of Nevada. In this particular case, the question is, would the owner of a vehicle in the state of California, would it be unfair to subject them to be hauled into a court in Nevada if that owner had given permission of that driver to go to Nevada or anywhere else? And the obvious answer is the Nevada courts do have jurisdiction over that driver, the owner. Only the owner can determine where this vehicle goes. In the budget case, the owner determined that the vehicle could not go to the state of Nevada. In this case, the owner determined that the vehicle could go to the state of Nevada. It's a huge difference. Permission is the key. In Budget Rent-A-Car, the driver did not have permission. In this case, the driver did.
So in order to limit liability, the owner would have to sit down and say, you can't go to Nevada, Arizona, California, Utah, New Mexico, and specifically indicate those excluded jurisdictions. Otherwise, they can expect to be held in the court anywhere.
Only the owner has the control over the vehicle. If the owner gives unfettered control of that vehicle to the driver, then why shouldn't the owner be subjected to the jurisdiction where that owner lets that driver drive?
And does that take an affirmative statement saying you can drive this car anywhere in this country that you want?
Absolutely. If I lend my car to you...
No. I think you might have misinterpreted my question.
Okay.
I said, does that require that the owner sit down and say you can drive this car anywhere in the country that you want?
Absolutely not. What's required of the owner of a vehicle is to control the vehicle. Only the owner can control where this vehicle goes. If the owner indicates that the vehicle can go to Nevada, Utah, if the owner says you negligent driver can drive the car to New Jersey anytime you want, and then on Pennsylvania Road in Jersey that driver gets in a wreck, I believe the law indicates that owner should be subjected to the jurisdiction of where that driver was because it's the owner that let the driver go there.
So how should we deal with when there's raised as to foreseeability?
Well, what the case law says throughout the country is that if the owner of the vehicle gives permission to the driver to go somewhere out that side of that state, then that is a sufficient minimum contact, and that covers the
foreseeability. Is that different from what you're arguing, giving permission opposed to remaining silent as permission?
Well, either you have permission or you don't. In this case, the driver had permission. If it were true, as counsel stated, that the driver only had permission to drive the car in California, then our argument would be much weaker. But the driver did have permission to drive to Nevada, did have permission to drive to Las Vegas, and the deposition testimony says that. We have to take the owner's word by way of deposition as opposed to by way of affidavit.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
This case will stand submitted and will be in recess until the next call of the court.